Okay, having seen some of the issues that impact on Dalit-Khosas from different directions, having talked about issues of Persumenisa and issues of Eseba and issues of Baal Tosif and adding on to numbers and issues of Afen Hayub Oso Hanes, we have to now really try to see if we can get an overall perspective on how all the different themes of the Dalit-Khosas come together. So we saw that on Daf Kuf Ches Amud Beis there are a few additional details about the rules of the Dalit-Khosas, and they leave us a lot of room to explore and to consider different possibilities. So we will, over the next day or two, try to see if we can get as much of a total perspective on this important mitzvah as much as we can. And I was about to say this important mitzvah, Drabanan, which is presumably what we're talking about. There is some suggestion that you find in some sources that there is some degree of d'oraisa in this mitzvah. It's a little hard to see how. We discussed the possibility that maybe Chazal defined the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim in a certain way that maybe it comes to include even this which they added on in the form of the Dalit-Khosas, and maybe there's a case to be made that it redefines the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, or maybe even to some degree the mitzvah of Matzah, or somehow they all come together to take a new form. But on the surface, certainly seems like we're dealing with a mitzvah d'rabbanan, even though there are psukim that are invoked, but those psukim don't actually contain any tzivoy of Dalit-Khosas, and are there as a inspiration, or there as a model. But to say that actually constitutes a mitzvah, it's harder to see like that. However, there are some indications in various places we'll look at. If you saw some of the Yerushalmis, you may have seen that some of the comments in the Yerushalmi do support that impression a little bit, that there is some aspect of d'oraisa. One part to just note on the outset is the different Rashis that point to different models for the Dalit-Khosas, different Rashis in our parak, right? So what do we see, for example, in various statements in Rashi as to what the Dalit-Khosas represent? Does somebody want to help me out? So, Ari?
I think there were two ideas from Rashi. The first place at the start of our parak was at the Khosas of Kenegib Arbalishanos and Lashana Geula. And the second that we saw later on in the parak is that the three of the Khosas are connected to three references to Pharaoh's cup. And the fourth is a kos that is said, the kos shel yayin al birkat hamazon.
Right. So that is interesting, right? So here you have the same Rishon Rashi in the same parak on two different dapim, giving different explanations. And as you could imagine, that certainly has provoked the attention of some of the commentaries. And it's hard to know if there really is satisfying answers to that question. And any thoughts occur to you as to why Rashi would say two different things? If they said them both in the same Dibra Maschil, it wouldn't necessarily be so surprising. Okay, so here are two possible theories as to what the Dalit-Khosas represent. The fact that in one place he says one, and the other place he says the other one, each time without indicating the other, is definitely thought-provoking. I don't know if you had any thoughts how you could possibly reconcile that. Zach?
The Kos Paro, that was regarding the Patur for women.
Uh-huh, okay.
So maybe it's just, that's kind of like a more Apeneu Otoanis kind of thing, that it's like, it's remembering the actual events that happened. Whereas Dalit-Khosas is more about, our status as a nation, like what we've become in terms of like the redemption.
Okay, definitely on a strong track there, and a track that some of the Achronim build upon in order to try to address that. The problem is that it's hard to find a really satisfying approach. I think you're definitely taking a good tack by looking at what each Gemara is talking about and trying to see if there is a reason why Rashi would highlight that aspect specifically. So what are the two contexts? So as you pointed out, so in our more recent daf, the context is the chiyuv of Nashim. And in the context of the beginning of the parak, it's on the Mishnah talking about that one should not have fewer than these dalet kosos, even if that is going to force you to turn to tzedakah for that purpose. So do those contexts help? So how did you want to take the next step again? So let's say, so if it's about afen hayu ba'oso hanes, so how does the paru reference support that?
Events that happened and how we were saved. Mm-hmm. So like kind of like the result of that, and like what that means is the status of our people. So the Kos Paro, so that's referring to like part of the nace of how, you know, we rose to power and then, you know, and then how we went down to Egypt in the first place, like this.
Interesting. Okay. I mean, I give you credit for trying, because it's a hard point, I think, to reconcile. I don't know if I found really satisfying approaches. Ari, did you want to comment further?
Yeah, I thought when Rashi was talking about the art of the Shanai Geula, it was in the context of like a persimonesis sugya, right? The reason the person has to go is because Hoseisin Galti Vokakti. So the way that you emphasize that persimones is by describing it's connected to the nace that happened, that Hashem took us out of Egypt, the art of the Shanai Geula. But when we were talking about the art of the Shlosh Koso Shel Paro, that was talking about more of the experiential, like how do we ourselves embody the sense of freedom, and that's why that was in the context of Sikya, where it's dealing with like the embodiments and the feeling necessary to fulfill the obligation of Arvikosu. So when it comes to like not what happened to us, but how do we experience it, like Tosa versus Maitza, or Active versus Passive, that's how we speak about the three Koso in that context of the Gemara.
So I think that also has a lot of potential. I think that that's also an approach that definitely has a lot to build on. The problem is, same thing we're saying to Zach, I think there's a lot of strength in these particular approaches. The problem is to get them all to harmonize together is, I think, going to be challenging. So, for example, we said to Zach about paying attention to the context in each Gemara is definitely relevant and is definitely helpful. The problem is, it's a little hard to do because presumably in the Mishnah we're focusing on the Persumei Nisa component, right? Especially if we say that Persumei Nisa is what requires the severity there, that you have to actually go begging for tzedakah in order to perform this. But the problem is it's hard to differentiate that from our daf, because if it had been on Amud Beis, you know, then maybe there'd be more room to talk about. But in the context of Reshua ben Levi, in the context of the Chi of Nashim and Afein Hayu Ba'oso Anes, it's hard to separate Afein Hayu Ba'oso Anes and Persumei Nisa. You know, presumably they are linked categories and that one is provoking the other. So that's going to be a challenge. At the same time, so Ari's point's very well taken, that it's very attractive to say that maybe there are two elements that are being highlighted here. And, you know, indeed may be a big part of the answer too, that maybe there is the Persumei Nisa aspect, which is more external. And maybe there is the Cheiris component, which I'm not sure if that's exactly how you meant to associate them, but it makes sense, I think, to say the Cheiris component is about your internal feeling. And then I think, again, a lot of the parts work, that to say that the Paro references, especially we mentioned last week, talking about Rav Nosson Gestetner's emphasis on how the Paro source maybe is to teach us what Cheiris is, that's how a king drinks. And therefore, you could make a good case that Cheiris is connected to that, and Persumei Nisa is connected to the four Lashonos Segula, and maybe that's two different aspects. The problem is, again, you know, it would have been a little neater had it been on the Gemara's and Amud Beis, putting it on the Afen Hayaboso Anes part is harder, I think, because it seems like that really should also be a function of the Persumei Nisa. So if we could edit the Rashis if we could put them in different places, I think that might be a little smoother. But that otherwise, I think between both of your comments, I think there's a lot to work with. It's just hard to put it in a very satisfying flow that's going to really razzle-dazzle. But there is also a suggestion, which is also a little difficult, I think, but Kli Chemda talks about this in a Sefer in Vayera. The Kli Chemda, if you're familiar with the Sefer, was written by Rav Meir Dan Plotsky, who was a Talmud of the Avnei Nezer. We've mentioned in the past a few Talmudim of the Avnei Nezer. He had a number of Talmudim, and who wrote Svarim that are well known and used. So the Kli Chemda is a Sefer on Chumash, where he talks about a lot of Lamdish Inyanim. And in his Sefer in Vayera, so he takes up this question of the Stira and Rashis. And he discusses this possibility that we alluded to before, that maybe there's some aspect to Araisa in the Dalakosos, as some of the references in the Yerushalmi might support somewhat. So if there is an issue to Araisa, so then maybe that wouldn't work as well on our daf, because afen ha'yibosu anes, if we assume that that is a derabanan concept, so then we would need to use the derabanan aspect. So maybe the paro references are to the derabanan aspect, and the dal lashon haseula are the deraisa aspect. But again, it's difficult, because to say the dal lashon haseula are a balash and sivoy as far as kos, I mean, again, you could build a case, but it's a little bit of a stretch. So I'm just trying to be honest here and highlight all these elements which I think could be a part of an approach, but we still need a little more work in order to bring them together in a way that answers every possible angle. But there's definitely valuable insights that come from looking at these parts that we have to keep in mind. Any further comments or questions about those points? So just to recap what we gleaned, is that it does seem that there is an aspect of Cheiris and an aspect of Prisuminisa. It does seem that there is what to notice from each case. We saw that the Nassim Perio thought that the examples from Paro contribute more to the Cheiris idea, and that the Dal Lashonos of Geula certainly seem to fit more the Persimonisa aspect. And the idea that maybe one is relevant in one context, the context of the Mishnah saying you have to provide from staka, and the second context being the context on Ardaf, where it talks about first in the instance of Afen Hayubos Mandes, there probably is something that is relevant there, but we're having a little bit of a hard time getting it all to click 100%. But definitely there are aspects of these points that we can extract and we can imagine is probably relevant to some of the broader issues we need to figure out. Okay, so far so good? Okay, so, and we should also emphasize, as we'll say more, you know, the idea that there's two dinim, so to speak, in Dalet Kosos, or maybe more than two dinim, so sometimes that is a Achronish suggestion, which is sometimes something we have to question how much it's founded. But here, it's close to an explicit Gemara on Ardaf now. Now that we're on Kufches and Midbeis, you know, there certainly are suggestions on Ardaf that there are different elements of the Kosos that can be teased out and separated from each other. Cheres and Dalet Kosos and Yayin all being mentioned each on their own. So we have to figure out a little bit what we can do with that, but the idea that the Dalet Kosos have different aspects to them that may come from different places is perhaps more rooted than some other Tzvei Dinim kind of approaches. Okay, so that's also something to keep in mind. And we've also mentioned from the beginning of the parak, but there's something that's going to find many more applications, so we'll also expand on it a little bit now, that the question that the Brisker Rav popularized and that a number of others brought up as well is the question of how do we conceptualize the mitzvah of the Dalet Kosos? what is the mitzvah about? Is it a mitzvah of drinking that Chazal wanted us to drink? And that's what we're trying to do. So why is it four as opposed to one or whatever? Because we see symbolism of four, four Lashonis of Geula, other models of four, but the mitzvah is primarily a mitzvah of drinking. And why drinking as opposed to other things? Actually, a question some Rishonim bring up. I don't think I put that on the list, but we'll talk about that as we go along as well. But it's not out of place in a night when there's a lot of mitzvos that are about ingesting something, when you have a mitzvah that is centered around a meal, and there's a number of consumption-related mitzvos, so this could be that as well. Alternatively, it may be that it's not necessarily about drinking, but it is about associating with the mitzvos of the night, and that we have four, by the most basic count, we have four mitzvos of speech that are relevant Pesach night, and perhaps the mitzvah is to associate each one of those mitzvos with a kos. So those four are probably Kiddush and Haggadah and Benching and Hallel, that each one of those mitzvos should be done al hakos. And even though that's not something that's unique to Pesach, that we find all year round, there is a value to doing mitzvos such as this al hakos. We make Kiddush every week, we bench every day. And the notion of doing these things al hakos is common to the year, but it's not always as important as it is Pesach night. And perhaps Chazal insisted on it specifically because of the chashivas that it has, and maybe it's also connected to Cheres, and we referenced the Gemara in Brachos, we were talking about this earlier, when the Gemara says that Havdalah Hakos was something which came and went based on the economic status of the Jewish people. So first it was an instance of institution of having Havdalah Hakos, and then when it got hard to afford wine, so then they put Havdalah in Tefillah, and then when they became more well off, so then Chazru Veshiru, then they put it back al Hakos again. So Kos ability is a reflection of the comfort level economically of the Jewish people. So maybe there is a cheres component there as well. And the rabbis ordained that even though this concept has relevance all year round, you could bench al hakos every day of the year if you want to, and maybe that would be a good idea, and you make Kiddush al hakos regularly, but Pesach night is a more fundamental expression. And it's also possible that the different elements that we're seeing here now of Persumanisa, of Cheres, that maybe they line up with one or the other. And maybe there's both, right? Maybe the mitzvah of Dalet Kosos has both, that we should drink times four, and we should do the mitzvah of Sahakos, and maybe one is representative of Cheres, maybe one is representative of Persumanisa. They could be associated in various different ways. So this question of whether it's about drinking or about brachas al hakos, so what nafkaminas could there possibly be? Some we've talked about, some we haven't yet talked about, some you may have seen from the Makaris this morning. So how would that affect things? Right, some we've seen, like for example, the suggestion in some Rishonim that women are obligated in Hallel and Pesach, are obligated in Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, even as we talked about at some length, maybe because they're obligated in Dalet Kosos. That if the mitzvah is Davka associated with Kos, so if rabbis tell us they're obligated in the Kosos, then it makes sense to say they're obligated in the associated mitzvahs. That's one possible reflection. What else could be impacted by this? So one of the points that we mentioned a few weeks ago at the beginning of this month was a point that Brisker Rav and others discussed, the question of Shamea Kaone, which is a very important question, practically speaking. That is it really necessary for everyone to have their own set of dalakosos at the table? Or could it be possible that Balabas just has to have four kosos, and he can recite Kiddush, etc., al hakos, and everyone will hear that, and will be yotzei that way? So that Tosfos in the beginning of the parak on Sadi Testament Beis, Tosfos there at least entertains the possibility that maybe that could work, and it doesn't sound like that from the Rambam. And Maharal brought up the question on Tosfos, how could it be Shemaya Kaona by drinking? You have Shemaya Kaona by actions? You have Shemaya Kaona by matzah, by listening to the crunch of the guy next to you? Normally, if there's a mitzvah to eat something, that's not something that the terminology of Shemaya Kaona would apply to. So the notion that you could even talk about it, it makes it sound like it's a mitzvah not of drinking, but of a bracha al hakos, comparable to Kiddush. And therefore, the same way, Kiddush on a regular Friday night, we don't insist that everyone at the table have their own kos. It's enough just for the Makadish to have a kos. So too, maybe the Seder could work the same way. Alternatively, though, if you don't accept that possibility, so then maybe there's no concept of Shemaya Kaona, it's about drinking. And the same way there's no Shemaya Kaona by matzah or mar, there's no Shemaya Kaona by dalet kosos either. And the whole concept's not going to be applicable. So, in theory, it could line up that way, but again, we see this whole topic might be a little bit more involved and complex than it seems. So it could be that there's both, and that maybe Tosfos also agrees they're both, because Tosfos doesn't conclude with great enthusiasm that, yeah, Shemaya Kaona is fine. And in fact, maybe Tosfos was only saying that related to the Mishnah specifically, which said you have to go begging for enough money to pay for the kosos. So in those circumstances, okay, if you don't have enough, you can't afford, so then just have one set in Shemaya Kaona. But Tosfos very possibly never meant to say that there's even a thought that Shemaya Kaona would accomplish everything that we're looking for with the Dalet Kosos. Just it might accomplish something. And maybe that's enough. So far, so good. Everybody with me? Rav Nassim Gestetner, the same author of the Nassim Perio we had mentioned the last week, but in his response in his Chuvis Lahoris Nassim, so he has a discussion about this in Chelik Beis. And he goes through these possibilities, independent of the Brisker Rav. He just mentions at the end, oh, I saw the Brisker Rav. He says the same thing, but he says it on his own. And he concludes there, as a matter of practical halacha, he says that if you have somebody who cannot drink dalet kosos for whatever reason, either for reasons of health, which we'll talk about a little bit more when we get to it, or for simple unavailability, there just is not enough wine to go around, or whatever reason. So if that's the case, so then it's probably better than nothing, or it's probably highly advisable that he should arrange to be at a Seder with somebody else who is reciting these brachos al hakos, and to say amen to that person's brachos, because the possibility that that accomplishes a big part of the goal here is a strong one. So we wouldn't advise that stam to somebody, because it doesn't seem like it satisfies every aspect of the dalet kosos, and there are definitely indications that it's certainly not enough, but it's very strongly possible that it's much better than nothing, and that if one really has no possibility of drinking the dalet kosos themselves, that to hear from someone else might indeed be very much a significant act. Okay, so far so good. This is also relevant to the question of how much to drink, which is itself relevant to somebody who, for whatever personal reasons, does not want to drink too much and would want to minimize the amount that they're drinking. So how much do you have to drink? So what would you say, Lalaka? How much does a coast require you to drink? Not asking in terms of milliliters or ounces. Sorry? So, Arvius, Levi, are you raising your hand? Okay, so as is often the case, you're both right. It's a machlokas. Right, in Shulchan Aruch, it says to drink a Revius, or maybe a Rov Revius. And it happens to be a machlokas in the Rishonim, although all these elements are there. So Tosfos, as Levi's pointing out, so Tosfos is of the view that it's really a Melo Lugmav, although they acknowledge, L'chachila, you should be drinking a Revius. But that, strictly speaking, it's Melo Lugmav. And the Ran, if you got a chance to see, I think I was relatively late on the list of the sources. I may not have gotten up to it. But the Ran says, no, that's the halacha by Kiddush. But Dalakosis is a different standard. It's going to require a Revius. Now, we also have a concept of Rubo Kukulo. So Rubo Kukulo can mean most of Revius, or it can mean most of the coast that contains at least a Revius. But that question of how to define it, do you define it as a Revius or a Melo Lugmav? So that probably also correlates to this issue. Now, what are we looking to do? Are we looking to make a bracha ahakos? Or are we looking to drink? There's a mitzvah to drink a kos four times. So if there's a mitzvah to drink a kos, so then presumably we have to define a halachic kos. What is a halachic kos? A revius. Or a kos itself that holds more than a revius. And then most of that because of Rubo Kukulo. But if the issue is that we're talking about drinking, not for the sake of drinking, but because of a brach al hakos. So brach al hakos, the drinking is kind of secondary. It's really the bracha that's recited al hakos, and the drinking is that we want to have a token drink. So the halacha for Kiddush is that Melo Lugmav is enough. So Tosfos seems to be working off that assumption, that it follows a model of Kiddush, and that's where the Ran disputes him. So that would make Tosfos consistent, right? That if the issue is a brach al hakos, so that's why Shemei Ka'ona is a possibility. Again, the model would be Kiddush. Kiddush is a brach al hakos. Kiddush works with Shemei Ka'ona. And Kiddush, Melo Lugmav, is enough. So if Dalet Kosos is the same idea, is the same logic of brach al hakos, those dinim could carry over, Shemei Ka'ona could work, and Melo Lugmav could be enough. And Tosfos would be l'shitaso, Tosfos would be consistent, the same perspective in both cases. But also, it's the same perspective more completely as well, because in both cases, we're not saying that that's the whole story, we're saying that's the focus. But l'chadchila, there would be an inyan to address the other aspect also. And it's consistent here as well. So as far as Shomei Ka'ona, we're not recommending that l'chadchila to anyone. L'chadchila, you should have your own kosos, but Shomei Ka'ona might work when that's the only possibility. And when it comes to Melo Lugmav, again, Tosfos said l'chadchila, it should be more, but that Melo Lugmav, strictly speaking, may at least suffice for the idea of brach al hakos. So that theory would be consistent across those two Tosfos. Okay, everybody with me? And the Tshuvas Laharis Nasan, Rav Gshtetner also points out that there's a view of Rav Amram Gon that if somebody doesn't have Dalet Kosos, so he's subject to Malkus, not because of the assumption that it's a Daraisa, but Malkus Mardus Midrabbanan, subject to an onus of Malkus. So he discusses there, as a point that Rav Yosef Engel asks in his Gilyone Hashas, that how exactly are you going to violate this in order to earn your Malkus? You have to do something active in order to be subject to Malkus, he's assuming. So he suggests that this is working off the premise that the Dalet Kosos are associated with these mitzvos, and they are a way of doing these mitzvos. And therefore, if you do the mitzvah, Haggadah, etc., Hallel, without the kosos, so that's where you are showing your defiance. That's where the act of rebellion is being carried out actively. Now, this also affects an issue that some later posts can bring up that can get you into some really fun lumdas. And it was actually even more fun last year. And I'll explain why. You think this year is the year with all the shilas, but last year it's a more common scenario than Erev Pesach Chalios B'Shabbos, and it's even more relevant there in a more complicated way. Question is as follows. What happens, what's the halacha in general if you're benching and you forget to say Yalo V'Yavo? What's the halacha? Anyone want to help me out? Yeah, Jack?
Yeah, I think you don't have to repeat benching. You can just continue because there is no chiyuv to eat to begin with.
Well, what if there is a chiyuv to eat to begin with?
If there were to be a chiyuv to eat?
Yeah, see, essentially what you're saying is true, but only sometimes. It depends what we're talking about. So the Gemara does say that point, that it depends on whether there's a chiyuv achila or not. So if it's Rosh Chodesh or Chol Hamoed, when we're not supposed to fast, but it's not a Chiyuv Suda in the absolute sense. So if one forgets to say Alav Yavo on Rosh Chodesh or Chol Hamoed, then he's not required to bench again. He should have said it to begin with, but if he didn't say it, they don't make you bench again. But if there is a Chiyuv Suda, so then we do require you to repeat the benching. So if it's a Yontif meal, or if it's a Shabbos meal, and we're talking about Ritzei, so then we do obligate you to repeat if you leave it out of benching. So what's the din the Seder night? Right, the Seder night, Ein Lecha Sudas Chiyuv Gadol Mizeh. So certainly the Seder night, that's an obligatory Suda. So if you forget to say Yalo V'Yavo at the Seder, you're going to have to repeat benching. And that, Rabbi Akiva Eiger has a tshuva about that, where he points out this is true about women also, because you could raise the question in general, if a woman forgets to say Yalo V'Yavo on a Yontif meal, maybe the Yontif meal is really a mitzvah saseh shazman grama, maybe she's not obligated in the same way. But Pesach night's not true, because Pesach night is built around matzah, and matzah, as we've mentioned, women are obligated in also on a level of Minat Torah. So everyone who forgets the Alav Yavo at the Seder is going to have to repeat. Men or women, it's the same story. So let me ask you this question. So at the Seder, you forgot the Alav Yavo. Now you have to bench again. Do you have to have another kos? What do you think? How would you address that issue? Mary?
You could say it two ways. Either it's Tali on the Machlokas or the Chakira for the Brisker Rav said, right? If it's about Amir al Kos and you didn't do the Griffin of Muslim properly, so you have to make a new Griffin of Muslim al Kos. But if it's about like a formalistic drinking, then presumably you did it. But you could ask even further, like, even if you say that it's about Griffin of Muslim al Kos, then would that raise questions of being Losif al Kos, which are quite interesting?
Okay, those two points are very legitimate. There's actually a third point to raise also. I think the third point we'll have to leave for tomorrow because I apologize, I have to end a little bit early. But their first two points are very well taken. So on the surface, it seems like it should connect to this issue that if the notion is that benching has to be al ha-kos, Pesach night, that's what the third kos is, so then it would seem that you have to not only repeat the benching, but you have to repeat the kos also. But if the issue is that there's just four kosos throughout the night, and yes, l'chachila, they're associated with various stages and various mitzvos, but really the kosos are their own set, just to drink four kosos. So then, if I have to repeat benching, okay, so I'll repeat benching, but I don't necessarily have to do another kos. So on the surface, I think that is a correct analysis. And your second point is also well taken. Rav Moshe Sternbach in the Tshuva makes that point specifically, talking about this issue. Says that it would seem that it's not kedai to be machmir on this question, because it would prompt the concern of Mosif Ahakosos. So, despite the fact that there is an argument to be made for either possibility, for that reason, he says, if you're repeating benching, you shouldn't bring another kos into the picture because of the Mosif Ahakosos concern. However, there is a third way to look at that question, or a third aspect to ask that question. I guess I'll leave that as your cliffhanger, because that also provokes some interesting gymnastics, especially if it happens to also be Friday night, as it was last year. So that question I'll leave you as your cliffhanger, if you can figure out what the other possible angle to that issue is. And we'll also have to explore a number of other topics in our time tomorrow. So just to quickly recap what we spoke about. So we tried to set up some of the major questions as far as the Dalakosos. The question of whether Dalakosos is Daraisa Drabanan. It seems like it's Drabanan according to most indications. But there are some theories or some Ramazim that may make it at least considered a Daraisa. And that's something that we need to try to keep in the back of our minds also. And we noted the steer in Rashi's, as many commentaries do, that Rashi, at the beginning of the parak, associates it with the four Lashonos to Geula, and by Afen Hayoso Anes, connects it to the Kosos of Paro. So it's certainly possible that there are two legitimate candidates, but why Rashi picks one over there and one over here is something that needs some explanation, and we have a lot of parts of the explanation, as you guys suggested. It's hard to make them all fit into a neat Hesber, but they're certainly all worth noting. One, the fact of the two contexts of the Gemara, that one's talking about the Chumrah of Pirsumei Nisa, and one's talking about Afein Hayu Ba'oso Hanes. But it's difficult to separate Pirsumei Nisa and Afein Ba'oso Hanes, unless you want to say that one is just talking about a Drabanan because of Afein Hayu Ba'oso Hanes, like the Kli Chemda discusses. And maybe there's some kind of correlation there. The possibility that one is about Cheres and one is about Pirsumei Nisa is a strong possibility, especially in light of the Hesber that we mentioned from the Nos Imperio, that the Paro source is about defining Cheres, and then the four Lashonos of Geula certainly do fit nicely with the notion of Pirsumei Nisa. But again, making it play out perfectly as far as why one comment is here and one comment is there, we still don't have a terrific answer to that. And then we talked about the question of whether it's a mitzvah of drinking or a mitzvah of bracha al hakos. And we discussed a few important nafkaminas. One is there shemeya ka'oneh by the Dalakosos, like Tosfos considers, which would only make sense if you say it's a bracha al hakos. If it's a mitzvah of drinking, so then the language of Dalakosos, the language of shemeya ka'oneh, really doesn't fit. And lahalacha lamaisa, the Lahoris Natsan paskins that if you really can't do Dalakosos for any of the reasons that may exist, that it's actually impossible for you. So then to hear somebody else is certainly a good idea, because there is a possibility that it's a bracha alakos, or at least that's an aspect of it. And to get that would certainly have value. And we talked also about the shir, the question how much to drink. Lahalacha, we assume it's a revius or a rov revius, but Tosfos considers the position that it should be a mlah lugmav and that the revius l'chachila, and that would correlate to their view about shemeya ka'ona, that maybe it's about bracha lakos, like Kiddush. And at least l'chachila, there may be an Indian to do more than that. That would also correlate to a mitzvah of drinking, but on a basic level, the idea that it's about a bracha alakos and can be satisfied with shemeya ka'ona and mlo lugmav was a possibility as well. And have the Laharis Nasan also use that to explain the view of Rav Amram Gon, that there's makos mardis for not having the alakosos, so doesn't that constitute a totally passive act? So maybe not. Maybe the idea is that it is included in the act of whatever mitzvah you're doing, Haggadah, the Halal. So if somebody is going to do those mitzvahs like Kos, maybe that's where the conversation came up. And then we left off on this point of Yalav V'Yavo. If you miss Yalav V'Yavo, you have to repeat benching, and that applies sometimes yes and sometimes no, but it definitely applies Pesach night when the meal is very much a chiyah for men and women equally. So if one were to forget Yalav V'Yavo at the Seder, for sure they'd be obligated to repeat the benching. But the question of whether they are supposed to have another coast together with that probably does depend on this issue, that if you say it's a dinin benching al ha-coast, and if your benching has to be repeated, then your coast should have to be repeated also. But if it's an idea of just having dalad kosos, and l'chilchila, they are arranged through the course of the Seder, but it's really about the drinking, so then, okay, ideally you would bench all the coast, but if you didn't, because you have to repeat the benching, so then it doesn't actually require another coast, and Rish Darbuch took the position that it's not kedai to be machmir on this because of the concerns of most of alakosos, which would be a more prioritized issue. But I left you with a cliffhanger to think about for tomorrow, that there is another way to approach that question of what should the issue be when benching again, whether it should require another benching a la cause, which can create some really interesting possibilities, especially when it coincides with Shabbos, as it has recently. And that's where we, God willing, will pick up tomorrow when we meet in person for our Tuesday share. So looking forward to seeing you in person and to continuing this very fascinating discussion. And hopefully we will have a lot to say. All right. Wishing you all a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Thank you. Kol tov.